Podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. This episode features an interview with Sarah Quiros, culinary librarian at the International Culinary Center in New York. Sarah is also behind the newsletter Snacks in the Stacks, which pairs food with books. Well, I'm here with Sarah Quiros, who is the culinary librarian at the International Culinary Institute here in New York City. Thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really appreciated the tour I've just had, and I know all of our listeners in Australia are going to be very interested to hear all about what you do as a culinary librarian. It's such an interesting title. But I also wanted to ask you if you didn't mind just giving a bit of a potted history of your background in libraries.
Sure. Thank you for coming by. Welcome. Hello to everyone in Australia. I got my start in the field working for Nick Higgins when he was at New York Public Library. I started off by volunteering with him, and we would bring books out to Rikers Island and set up tables in the gymnasium and hand out books to the gentlemen who were incarcerated there. And in addition to that, we would do reference letters throughout the whole country. From there, I'm kind of all over the place. If you look at my background, I did one semester as a guest librarian at Universidad Francisco Marroquín in Guatemala City, and I taught a course in digital research there, and I helped with some different projects that they were doing, a few different digitization projects, and basically anywhere they needed me. I would be on the circ desk, at the reference desk, however I could help. And then after that, I got a job at Brooklyn Law School Library. And I was actually working there the same time as I was at Rikers. And so it was an interesting combination.
Law and correctional.
Yep, learning about the law and meeting future lawyers and meeting people that had wound up incarcerated. So it was a difficult time, but it was an interesting time too.
I think you just had such an interesting background, and then clearly your passion here in the Culinary Institute is the cookbooks and you know, servicing this community. Can you just talk a little bit about what it is to be a culinary librarian and the kinds of questions
Sure.
and things you get? And if we get interrupted, that's fine. We can just keep going.
So how I wound up here was that I was working for the Job and Business Academy at Queen's Library. And a big focus there is helping people search for jobs. So one of my job duties was to check all the job postings that were open every single day. And I came across this job, which was so funny because it wasn't even on my radar as being posted with ALA or any of the big library blogs, nothing like that. It was just on a website called Good Food Jobs, which I was looking at because some of my patrons in Queens were dishwashers, cooks, you know, things like that. And so I was trying to find positions for them. And I had always had a big passion for food. I've always been a home cook. I collect cookbooks, but I hadn't really done anything with it professionally. So I wasn't sure how much of a shot I had. And I applied, and I didn't hear a word from them until a whole year later.
Really?
Because in the meantime, they had hired a different librarian who then got married, and her husband wanted to move away, and so she quit. And luckily for me, they didn't want to go through the process all over again, and so they called me and asked if I was still interested. And so I guess all of which is to say I've never had training as a culinary librarian. I sometimes have library students ask me about that. What should I do? Who should I talk to? And as far as I know, there aren't too many of us. The biggest competitor of my school here in the city is ICE, which is the Institute of Culinary Education. And we're ICC, the International Culinary Center. And over there, they don't have a library. They don't have a librarian on staff. And then there's another school here, the Natural Gourmet Institute, that, again, they don't have a staff librarian. They just have a space with some books. So it's a pretty rare and special characteristic of this school in the city. And then at the Culinary Institute of America, that's probably our biggest culinary school here in the state, they do have a much larger library with more like a traditional academic library with a big staff and a lot going on. So there aren't a lot of training opportunities. There aren't a lot of, work study opportunities. I mean, basically when anyone comes to me, I always give them the option if they want to work with me or speak with me or interview me, anything like that, because I'm all about, sharing the love and giving people opportunities and keeping it going. I guess the main thing I would say for librarians interested in this type of work is just to do as much as you can on your own. Follow all the different culinary blogs and websites, keep up with cookbook reviews, and be very hands-on and cook, because I feel I get more respect from the chefs here if they know. I mean, I've taken classes here since I started, if they know I have an active role. And not only that, but I'm better able to assist whoever comes in here if I actually have some kind of hands-on experience with what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. And with your newsletter, Snacks in the Stacks, such a great title, by the way. Did you start that before you started working here, or has it been a sort of progression from your role here?
No, it was definitely a progression from my role here. Actually, the kind of ironic thing was when I was working in the public library, anytime I had a break, I would be sneaking off to the 641.5 Dewey section, looking at all the cookbooks and reading all the food memoirs. And I'd have a big stack on my desk. And then when I left there, I realized I missed all the regular books, because when I look around here, everything has to do with food. And sometimes I just want to read a novel or, something light and fun. So I decided I wanted to kind of merge the two, and I review all different types of books in my newsletter. But then I try to bring them back to the ICC by pairing food with them and pairing recipes with them. So it could be a book that has nothing to do with food, but I just suggest what you might want to eat or drink while you're reading it or after you read it.
That's brilliant. And how do you do that? Does it just sort of, if it's sort of a heavier read, is it then you suggest light foods to balance it out? Or do you suggest no, this needs a glass of a strong red and a hard cheese? Or how do you actually do the pairing?
Some things are really obvious. I haven't actually reviewed it, but if you think about a movable feast, there are so much food in there, or there are some novelists that rely so heavily on food to tell their story. And I always love those books. And others, for instance, I recently reviewed The Networks of New York, which is an incredible book out from Melville House that covers the physical presence of the internet in the city, which is something you don't think about that much. But it's a portable guidebook. As much as it is an overview and a history and a nonfiction, it's very much meant to be in your pocket, carried with you around the city, looking at things. So I said you needed light and portable food. You should bring dried coconut nuts. And I come up with little things like that.
That's brilliant. Thank I love you. It. Well, another question I was interested to ask you is about the programs and things that are going on at the Culinary Institute here, and then how you tie that into the library and how you support those programs and the students. So could you talk a little bit about what you do in that respect?
Sure. The biggest thing, this actually started, I think it's been a little over a year now, maybe a year and 6 months or so. And I was getting a lot of questions from students of, how do I get in the library? I want to do a cookbook. I don't know where to start. I have all these ideas, but I don't know what to do next. And so I reached out to a few of our alumni who had published, and it ended up being a really wonderful panel. We had Tyler Cord, who is the chef at Number 7, which is a pretty big restaurant. And he had done one cookbook about broccoli, and at the time he was working on a cookbook which has now been published that's called An Uncomfortable Book About Sandwiches.
Wow.
And it's all about sandwiches. And then we had another alumni, Sam Senevaratne, and she actually just won a James Beard Award for her book, which is called The New Sugar and Spice. And it's all around baking and how to use more different seasonings rather than just relying on sugar when you're baking. And then the third person was Emily Raffa, who we actually have up there. And she did the Clever Carrot Cookbook. And the cool thing was that they all came from very different backgrounds, and they took very different paths to get where they are. So I mentioned that Tyler had the restaurant. Sam was doing recipe testing and working at different magazines. Emily was Emily was blogging and doing social and basically doing everything from a home cook perspective. And Emily was picked up through Pinterest because people liked what she did, and she put a book deal together off of that. Sam did a very traditional book proposal with all the different sections you're supposed to cover and, very traditional method of testing recipes and working with a photographer and working with a publisher. And Tyler was offered the book deal based off of his restaurant. Okay. And he had a battle with the publishers because they wanted a very classic restaurant cookbook, like I showed you earlier, with pictures of all the staff and a very Brooklyn feel. And he wanted to do an uncomfortable book about sandwiches. And so he had to fight it to the end to get it. And it just ended up being a really interesting talk for everyone. And so many people liked it, I decided to continue the series. And so since then, we have one almost every month. Not always, but just about every month. And we've brought in photographers, we've brought in agents, we've brought in editors, food writers from all different walks of life, all different perspectives. And it's so fascinating to me that no one really gets to their book through the same path. Everyone has a slightly different story and different advice for the students also.
I'm sure the students find that both comforting and annoying as well.
Absolutely.
There's no template to follow, but Absolutely. Everybody stands a great chance, you know, by going taking their own path.
Yeah, and actually one of the editors that came in did say that cookbooks are one of the few types of books that have gone up with the advent of ebooks. People would rather have a tangible object that to cook from and to keep in their kitchen rather than buying the ebook.
Exactly. Well, you never know, you could throw your iPad in the sink by mistake.
So.
Or use it as a chopping board or something. And I know one of the other things you mentioned yesterday was the food sharing side of things. So can you talk a little bit to that as well?
Yeah. So besides working in the library here, I'm also the coordinator for our Farm to Table program, which I mentioned to you. And through that, well, I should explain that. What that is in addition to our standard culinary curriculum, some students request to do this program, and they have additional enrichment activities outside of class. So the class content is all the same. They still learn classic technique. They're very well-versed and prepared to go in any fine dining kitchen. But on top of that, we're doing outside field trips. We're having guest speakers in where they're thinking about sustainability. They're thinking about the food system. They're thinking about what food are we putting on the table and how does it get to the table. So it's not for everyone, but the people who take it really love it. And they're always sort of going in different directions after they graduate. And it all culminates with 1 week at Blue Hill at Stone Barns, which is a restaurant just a little outside of New York, upstate. And they have a working farm and the restaurant on the same property. And all the food, well, not all, but almost all the food served in the restaurant comes from the farm. But what makes it very unique is that the chefs work very closely with the farmers. And it's not like they're saying, well, plant these seeds and bring it to me. They're saying, what do you have? What do you think will grow? What would be interesting? The head chef there is Dan Barber, and he wrote a brilliant book called The Third Plate, which is all about rethinking the way that we're eating. So through that program, one of the guest speakers we had was Wen Jie Ying, and she started the company Local Roots CSA. Do you have CSAs in Australia?
Yeah, I don't think it's quite exactly the same, but yes.
Okay, yeah. So I won't get into all the background, but basically she saw some problems with the way our CSAs are operating here, how it's hard to find one that you like, how it's you can't be as selective about which items that you want. It's a little inconvenient usually. So she partnered with various local farms in the area, and she does, I mean, great media, great marketing. She does really great events and programs around it too, so it really is more of a community. It's not just someplace you go pick up your vegetables. And she came in to speak with the students about everything she was doing, and then we decided to start a CSA here. So it's open actually to everyone in the community. You don't need to be working here. You can just come by and pick it up, and they drop off every week.
And just seasonal vegetables
and
fruits?
Yeah, seasonal. Yeah, you can choose anything you want. Their website has a lot of different options. They have the basic vegetable share. They also have a really cool program called Ugly Vegetables.
Oh.
So it's the items that wouldn't make it into a store because they don't look good.
Yes.
But they're still good for you. They're still delicious. They're not spoiled or anything like that. It's just that they don't look the way we expect our food to look.
But they're more natural, probably,
than
what we actually get, the polished, waxy
apples. Right. People love the idea of organic or local, but then they don't like to see something that has, you know, maybe an insect has taken a bite out of it. Well, that's natural. That's what happens on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, you have the option of mushrooms, milk, eggs, cheese. It's a very comprehensive program. You can do as many add-ons as you want to or as few as you want to.
Interesting. And I suppose, like you mentioned, this particular area, whilst it's rich in cafes and restaurants and things like that, doesn't seem to have much in the way of supermarkets and right. things. So that's Soho. So just yeah, for the listeners.
You probably noticed walking around Soho. And it's tough. Even a lot of the restaurants are closing. We used to have a restaurant here in our school that the students would work at to get hands-on experience. But the landlord wants to move retail in there because they can make more money with retail. And I don't know if you noticed, but when you're coming up, the bottom floor of the building is completely empty. And it has been for quite a while. And I think it's just hard for restaurants to make enough money to cover the rent, even if they're charging high prices, even if they have great food. It's really hard to keep up. Yeah. And I'm sure even more so for small grocery stores and things like that. We have a few little delis, but there aren't any places where you can really get, you know, your whole food shop for the week and get everything you need.
Have you any book recommendations for any lovers of food memoirs, or like what's your favorite cookbook lately that you think is amazing? Or
sure. So for food memoirs, my all-time favorites are the home cooking books by Lori Cohen. I love those. They're just so classic, and they have recipes interspersed. I love everything Ruth Reichel does. She's just magic. Whatever she touches is great. Another favorite is Blood, Bones, and Butter by Gabrielle Hamilton. Mm. She's the chef at Prune here, and she was actually a writer before she became a chef, and it really shows. You know, you can tell by her style of writing, and she just had a very fascinating life. It's a great story. And then for cookbooks, I've been using the Basque book a lot lately by Alex Raj. It's beautiful. It has great recipes and pretty simple, honestly, to execute. I think a lot of times people are intimidated by restaurant chefs when they do them. Yeah. And that it will be too many steps. You know, I had someone, you pointed out the Milk Bar cookbook to me earlier. I had someone recently come to the library and complain that each recipe has so many steps. And it's not just these are the ingredients. It's, you know, turn to page 182 and make this first, and then you can come back. And, you know, so the Basque book is pretty simple. It's pretty accessible, but you can still make really elegant, beautiful food, delicious food. And then we've been gearing up for Thanksgiving. Do you guys do Thanksgiving over there?
We don't. No.
I know it's a very American thing.
It is. I have experienced it once 2 years ago in Portland, Oregon, staying with an American family, some parents of some friends. And it was just like another Christmas, only a month before Christmas. And I don't think I've recovered since having two Christmases.
Yeah, it's a lot of It is very odd.
I was very sleepy for a while. And I haven't been hungry since, basically.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, that's what we've been focusing on lately. I have a little display up right now. For our listeners, I'll explain it. We have Thanksgiving by Sam Sifton. Sam Sifton is a writer for the New York Times. And basically all his recipes, I've never had a problem with them. They almost always come out perfectly if you follow them step by step, which you can't really say for everyone. And the traditional Thanksgiving is like, you always have a turkey, you have potatoes, maybe like yams, Brussels sprouts, things like that. And so he goes, I love it because it's not like usual giant cookbooks. It's a very small, compact book.
Yeah.
You can take it with you when you do your food shop and get everything you need. And then all the recipes are in one place and you don't have to have papers flying all over your kitchen trying to sort things out. And then dessert, we always do pie, so I have a couple. The Pie and Pastry Bible by Rose Levy Barenbaum, and that's very famous. She's very famous here. She does anything in the pastry world, anything in the baking world. And the 4-20 Blackbirds Pie Book, which I love. It's a little cafe here. They have one location in the Brooklyn Public Library, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And a lot of our alumni work there. They're very friendly with ICC. And then I have just a couple of fun, actually one of them went out. I had a couple of fun cocktail books because the other thing, you should always have something nice to drink when your guests come for Thanksgiving and a little something for yourself so you can enjoy your cooking. So I have the Butter and Scotch book, which is, it's actually located in Brooklyn as well. And they do, cocktails and desserts, and they'll pair the cocktail with the dessert. It's really fun.
Do they have something for pumpkin pie?
No, unfortunately. They might be doing something coming up. You never know, but there's nothing in the book for it. And then Drinking with the Saints, which is a really fun book, too. It has suggested cocktails for all the saints and then what they may have drank in their times. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, no, they look great.
A few little different things.
Great display.
Thank you.
Well, that sort of wraps up all my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have?
No, I think you've covered everything. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for agreeing to have a chat and for being at Book Riot on the weekend.
Oh, that was so fun.
So much
was
fun. Amazing. I slept so well last night. I was so tired.
I know, it was busy.
Yes, busy. But it was great. And yeah, I'm just so happy that I could be here. So
thank you. Thank you for coming. If anybody would like to follow me, I'm Snacks in the Stacks basically everywhere on social. So you can just look for me.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Sarah Quiros.
Well, that was Sarah Quiros, culinary librarian at the International Culinary Center in New York. You can follow her on Instagram at Snacks in the Stacks. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this interview, and we'd love you to review us on iTunes. It does help other people to find out about CardiCast and lets us know we're on the right track. Keep an ear out for more CardiCasts. Check out our website at newcardigan.org for more events. And remember, folks, JF.